Welcome to the Rehab Rebels podcast. Are you a rehab professional ready to transition to an alternative career? Hear inspiring stories from others just like you and learn the best ways to bridge your career gap. This podcast has you covered. Now here's your host, doctor of physical therapy and podcaster, Tanner Welsh.
Perfect. Okay. This is going to be really similar, Olivia, to our discovery call and a lot of things we've already talked about. And what we'll do is just lead into with where you went to CODA school and what you were doing right after you graduated from CODA school.
Okay, so I started CODA school in Baltimore, and during the program, I was at the time working at an animal emergency clinic. When I completed the program, when I graduated, I moved on to working at GBMC Hospital, actually. And shortly after that, I moved on to working in a skilled nursing facility. And I stayed there for quite a few years. I was pretty happy in that location. I settled in as a new grad CODA and eventually ended up moving on to other positions. But I did stay there for a while and enjoyed that type of setting quite a bit, actually.
Okay. And so you were at this setting, enjoyed it quite a bit. What was the reason for the shift into a new position?
Okay. So that's a loaded question, Tanner. So I worked, at the time I was working in Maryland. That's where I'm from originally. I moved to Pennsylvania and worked in a skilled nursing facility setting, assisted living settings for quite a while. And honestly, I just began to see the writing on the wall, as I say. There was such a change in the dynamics of how assistants were being utilized in those settings, how the reimbursement was occurring was concerning, and how we as assistants were being devalued almost on an annual basis. It was just degrading a little bit at a time. And that writing on the wall really made me aware that a change needed to happen. Not only that, but I became very unhappy in the setting as a OT clinician providing direct care services. It was not fulfilling any longer. So that really led to me seeking out alternative career options as far as a CODA is concerned.
Sure. What were some things that through those years that you're talking about that happened that really just changed the quality of work that you were doing and made it unhappy for you? Whereas before, it sounds like you were enjoying it. It was great. And then these changes started to happen. Can you go into that a little bit more about what was actually going on? What changes did happen that made it just not as fulfilling as it used to be?
Sure. So I began my journey in occupational therapy in the early 2000s. That's when I graduated. That's when I was a new grad. At the time, the rehab world was very different compared to what it is today. The rehab world, we were valued, not just OTs and assistants, but as a profession, there was so much more value to the services that we provided. It was enjoyable. And when I say fulfilling, that's what I mean. It was enjoyable. It was an enjoyable setting. We felt that our services were valued and we were just able to really provide services to the patients that they needed. So over the years, with the Medicare guideline changes, that all really began to change. As an assistant, we lost so much autonomy. The ability to make any kind of changes to a plan of care was taken away. And there was a time where I was very, not just me personally, but PTA and OTA assistants, we were very sought after. We were receiving calls and emails from recruiters quite frequently, even at our current places of employment. We were receiving calls and emails about jobs, positions that were available. And then over the years, that gradually decreased. And it's my understanding that was directly related to the reimbursement changes that occurred over the years.
Okay.
So the dynamic shifted. We're talking about a 20-year span of time. So that doesn't seem like it happened quickly. But for me, looking back on it, it seemed to happen quickly. Mm-hmm. I went from a time period of being very happy in my job as a CODA to being very unfulfilled and just feeling like there was no autonomy with my designation any longer.
Okay. Okay. So you got to this point, and then that's when you started really your interest with trying to find something else outside of what you were doing started.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So from there, where did you go? How did you know what direction to go and what to do?
So I was employed for a good many years on a full-time basis. I stepped back from that and I was working on a PRN basis for multiple facilities in my locality. When things really began to change, COVID obviously became a huge issue. So I was working at multiple facilities pretty regularly. I had a very good source of income coming in, and COVID became an issue. And these facilities that I was working at were very concerned about having people come in from facility to facility, which obviously made sense. 100% that made sense. So that really put a damper on the PRN possibilities for me.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, actually, I had started working at within the local school system, actually. I took on a position as a paraprofessional in the school systems, and I was working in autistic classroom settings just try to kind of get my foot into the door for something different, something to build my skill set, because I think that's so important that as rehab professionals, we have to be able to demonstrate that we have a skill set that will flow over and transfer over to various settings.
Absolutely.
So I therefore began working in autistic classroom settings, and that was an incredible experience. But then again, when COVID hit, that all came to a halt, unfortunately.
Okay. So
after that, honestly, it was about a year-long journey for me. I really dove into the job search process. And when I say dove into it, I was working very limited hours. The available hours for me had been reduced to the point of not being feasible any longer. So I decided it was time to seek out other options.
Okay.
And it was time to seek out other options, not in the clinical setting any longer. So there were so many reasons for me to search out a non-clinical type of position at that point in time.
Let's talk about that. Why?
Sure.
Why just non-clinical versus maybe some other clinical role?
For me personally, I've been a treating clinician for 20 years, and I felt that it was just time to move on. I think as a treating clinician, you get to a point where you feel that maybe your skill set is not being utilized the way that it truly could be. So it might be time to move on to something else. Might be time to just try out something else, develop a new set of skills, see what can transfer over. And that's just where I was at that point. I wasn't happy in the clinical setting.
Mm-hmm.
And for us as clinicians, the rehab world has changed so much, and it continues to change, that I think if we aren't adapting to those changes, then we are going to be stuck in a rut of unhappiness in the clinical setting.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see, rehab professionals to fan out a little bit and to really look and dive into yourself and then dive into what potentials there are out there in the world that our skills could flow over to.
Yeah, I agree. That completely makes sense. Let's go with, okay, so you know you want to go non-clinical.
Right.
Where do you go from there?
So from there, it was really an interesting journey. It was about a year worth of my life diving head on into searching for positions that would be comparable, that my skills would be applicable to. So that's where I joined these alternative career groups for therapy clinicians. And I sought out what others were doing. How are they thriving? How are other therapy clinicians transitioning into these roles? And really, it was the title of the job position that I needed to have an understanding of. So I did research on LinkedIn. I did research on Indeed. Just really try to get an idea of what is potentially even out there for me as an OT assistant. What could my skills transfer over to? And like I said, it was about a year-long search before I came across the clinical rehab liaison position that just happened to fit the bill for me.
Hello, Rehab Rebels. This is a quick, short announcement to give you an update on what is to come in the new year, starting in January 2024. We're going to be releasing solo episode content, starting with the stressful work environment and building out from there, and all these little mini transitions that are involved with transitioning from a work or job that we don't like and getting to one that we do like or even love. And the content is going to be in one of three buckets. The first one is career transitions, life alignment, personal and professional growth and development. The second one is going to be around finances involved with these different lifestyle and career transitions. The third one is about business entrepreneurial topics. And so with that, happy holidays to you and yours. Safe travels, and we will see you in the new year. Did you try anything else out before landing that clinical liaison position and test the waters and maybe realize it wasn't a good fit for you?
No, I will say honestly, no. So I had, like I said, I had worked as a paraprofessional in the school system in the autistic setting, in the autistic classroom setting, and that I could have continued doing that, but COVID put a stop to that at the time because all of the kids moved on to remote learning, but I would have continued that with that. I wouldn't say it was something that I chose to discontinue, that it wasn't right for me. Honestly, Tanner, I just felt at the time, the non-clinical setting at this point in my life, 20 years into the game, is what I needed to transition to.
Perfect. Okay. Tell us what a rehab clinical liaison is all about.
So it's interesting because my position as a rehab liaison is a little bit different from a Monday through Friday position. So my position originally was only Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I had almost two roles. It was a dual role position where I was a rehab liaison, but also an admission liaison for Encompass Health Rehabilitation Hospital. And that is a nationwide company that offers short-term inpatient rehab services. So my position, I accepted Monday through Sunday based on the fact that my then 13 and 15-year-old children were remote learning. That position was allowing me to be home with them Monday through Thursday and give them kind of the educational support that they needed. So I have a child who has ADHD and some sensory processing issues and some learning challenges. So I wanted to be able to provide him the support that he needed. And this position allowed that to occur. My role at the time included the completion of the pre-screening process, which means we are looking at our referrals that are coming from different sources, hospitals, assisted living settings, the home setting. We are these referrals are coming to Encompass, and we are determining whether or not they are an appropriate fit for the inpatient rehab setting. There's a whole process that goes along with that.
Okay.
And then we need to communicate with social workers, with the referral sources, with the patient and with their family. So there's a lot of communication that is going on, a lot of back and forth to determine if it's the right setting to fit this particular referral's needs.
For sure. So are you guys the ones that actually decide whether they're appropriate, or do you just gather everything and then pass it on to someone else that decides?
I would say we make those determinations because there are specific criteria that particular referral would need to meet. And when I say they need to meet, that's because we need to determine if we are the right setting for this person based on their needs. So if a person isn't meeting the criteria, it's not really a matter of whether or not they fit our needs, but if we are able to help them for whatever their needs might be. So we do come across those patients, those referrals who are questionable, but we're able to bounce that off of each other because there's a whole team of 5 to 7 in the location where I work currently. There's a whole team of liaisons who are from multiple backgrounds, including physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing, who can just offer different aspects, who can offer different insight into what their thoughts are and whether or not this particular referral meets that criteria. So ultimately, the liaison team does make that decision, but going a little more deeper into that, our medical director, our doctors, our respiratory therapy team, they can often be involved in that decision as well to help with making those decisions.
Okay. For you, what was it about the clinical rehab liaison position that just really struck with you and you knew this was the non-clinical position for you?
Initially, I felt that, okay, this is what I need to do to progress forward in my career. So that feeling of stagnation, that feeling of I'm here and I'm just not going to progress forward is not something that I am willing to accept. I think it's really important for us to understand ourselves and determine what we will and what we won't accept. And at that point in time, there were so many things happening in our world, and in my personal life that I just said, this is absolutely what needs to happen for me to progress forward. I knew that it would be a tremendous learning experience. And ultimately, that is what it comes down to for me. If I'm going to learn from it and the skills will flow over to progress me forward in my career, then I absolutely will take that jump.
Nice. Okay. What were some struggles or pain points that you had going through this transition, and how did you overcome them?
I would say the information deficit, let's put it that way. So I went into this position being a treating clinician for 20 years. So I felt that I had the clinical background, the therapeutic background, the awareness of insurance and reimbursement background. But when I started this position, it became very clear that there was so much I had to learn. So I think that was truly my biggest struggle, that after 20 years in the therapy industry, I had so much to learn. So at this time that it's this struggle and this hurdle that I need to get over, it was a challenge that I was just so ready to take. Now at this point, 2 years later, I've been doing this for over a little 2 years working as a clinical rehab liaison. I feel that things are falling into place. There is a knowledge deficit when clinicians begin this role. There is a transition period. It's just something that you, for lack of a better word, have to roll with. If you are willing to take this jump into a non-clinical role, you have to be willing to accept the fact that you might not know everything. And you are about to go on a roller coaster of learning about the world and about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I would say the knowledge deficit was a huge, I don't want to say a barrier, but it was a huge challenge for me.
Definitely.
At the same time, I will say that I was in awe of the other liaisons and staff members that I was learning from, because the amount of knowledge, their knowledge base was just awe-striking to me in these various aspects of their role, whatever their role was. The knowledge that they were able to pass on to me was just awe-inspiring.
Nice. What advice would you give those that are in the position that many in the rehab profession are, where it's just they're burnt out, they're not happy with what they're doing, maybe they feel like they should go do something or want to do something else, but maybe they just don't know how?
Okay, so I think that's another loaded question, Tanner. I will start off by saying I think it's heartbreaking to read the posts on sites like Facebook and come to the realization of just how many clinicians are burned out.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about people who are my age that have been in this profession for 20 years. We're talking about some folks who have been in the profession 1 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so upsetting, because when I started 20 years ago, if it had stayed that way, there's the potential that I would still be in that type of a position now. But because of the changes, I fully understand a new grad or graduate who is working only 5 years after graduation, wanting to make that transition. So I think it's important to recognize within yourself, again, what you are willing to accept and what you aren't willing to accept within mm-hmm. your life, because life is so short.
Mm-hmm.
And we do need to have an understanding of our value. We need to have an understanding of our self-worth as clinicians. So I'm coming from the standpoint of occupational therapy. I know your background is in physical therapy. And I think while we are the same, we are also a little bit different at mm-hmm. the same time. So with occupational therapy, our skills transfer over into different job positions than yours would. Not that one's better than the other, don't take it the wrong way. But I think it's important for us to be able to transfer our current knowledge base and our skills into those other positions. Sometimes we don't have that awareness. And using a professional to help us come to understand that is extremely important. So when I say using a professional, I reached out to professional resume writers. And the company that I used was called, Prosper.
Polished Prosper.
Yes, I'm so sorry. Thank you. So Joni Johnson with Polished Prosper, her background is in occupational therapy, and she also has an MPA, and she is so very skilled at writing resumes for those of us in the therapy profession. She is so very skilled at transferring our skills to what it is that we're looking towards. What it is that we want to apply to.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, once we have this professional resume written for us, we need to have the understanding that it's very important to transfer your skills to each individual job that you are applying to.
Mm.
So I really can't emphasize that enough. The use of not just professional resume writers, but those who are from our background, they can transfer our skills. They know us. Mm-hmm. They know what we can do. They know how our skills will be extremely useful for whatever job it is that we're applying for. And they can put that in writing very skillfully. And then that will help us to transfer that onto whatever position we are applying for that might differ from what we told them initially. So it's a learning process again, but I just really can't emphasize that enough. The use of some type of agency along the lines of Polish to Prosper, where they are, their background is in therapy. They have that awareness. They are just so extremely helpful. And that, I think, was the catalyst that really helped me to get the position as a clinical rehab liaison.
Nice. Who do you feel is a good fit for the clinical liaison position?
I think therapy professionals who have some clinical experience under their belt. So 5+ years, I think, would be a reasonable amount of time of experience to have under your belt before applying to a liaison position. Say that because you need to have that clinical time. You need to have that time where you are connecting with those that you are providing services to. The clinical aspect of being a rehab liaison includes the understanding of lab values. It includes the understanding of medical conditions beyond what my scope of knowledge was, even after 20 years. So I really think applying to a position before you've even had a chance to know what type of clinician you are, it might be faulty. It may not be in your best interest.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. For those looking to maybe apply to clinical liaison positions, where would you recommend, or where did you find your clinical liaison positions at?
Like I had mentioned, I spent a lot of time networking on LinkedIn. I developed some great connections as far as social media is concerned. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the position for Encompass Rehabilitation was posted on Indeed. So those type of those social media job posting websites are really great. That's a really great starting point.
Okay.
Networking is extremely important, not only to develop the leads, but also to make that connection with others who are in positions like yourself that might be experiencing those, the challenges that you're going through. And then you can bounce ideas off of each other. So LinkedIn really is a great networking site to be able to do that.
Nice. What have you realized from this journey, or what kind of awareness have you gained from this journey?
I will refer back to my previous statement about the knowledge deficit. So it was humbling. Not that I felt that I was all knowing going into the position as a clinical liaison in any way, but I felt that, honestly, I felt that I was prepared to take on this position. And when I took on the role as a clinical liaison, I was humbled to learn how much I didn't know. So that certainly is something that I learned greatly from this job as a liaison.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to cover or discuss that would benefit Rehab Rebel listeners who are wanting to break away from traditional therapy into alternative careers?
I think I'd like to talk a little bit about home modifications, if that's okay. That's a really great area of interest that, while it's different from what I'm currently doing, that is actually on my radar a little bit more than I've discussed. Yeah, I think I'd like to talk about that a little bit.
Go for it.
So when I was in OTA school the first time around, I had the opportunity to take a certification course with an amazing OTR. Her name is Shoshana Schamberg, and she is out of Baltimore, Maryland, which is my hometown. She taught a course on home modifications, and we, those of us involved in the course, were actually able to go to a location called Future Home. This no longer exists, unfortunately, but Future Home was the home of a gentleman who had a disability, unfortunately, due to an injury. And at the time, we're talking about the very early 2000s, everything that he had modified in his home was absolute state of the art. and new to the world. And the experience that I had learning from Shoshana Shamberg piqued my interest in the home modification world. And I am still learning as far as that's concerned. So between then and now, I've taken an additional course through University of Southern California for their executive home modification certificate course. I completed that before going back to school. I'm in school now. So before going back to school, I went through the University of Southern California home modification program, which was absolutely amazing and challenging. And I completed it and I have that certificate now in my back pocket. Mm-hmm. And I'm really hoping to be able to use those skills in the future, along with what I have learned from being a rehab liaison, because those skills actually mold together very well.
So what are some examples of how you would use this home modification certificate?
So we have a lot of folks in the world who right now who are aging. Our aging population is increasing drastically on a daily basis. And most of these people truly do want to remain in their homes. So a home modification specialist would go into the home of a referral and determine what is safe, what we can do to make it safer, and how we can best keep that particular person in their home. That's ultimately what it comes down to.
Okay, so is that like somebody that like works with contract companies or works with like home health agencies? Or I guess, where is that role? And I guess, how are they getting compensated for their expertise in home modification?
That I would say is all of the above to answer your question, Tanner. Right now, there is an organization that I am part of. It's called HMODA, which is Home Modification Occupational Therapy Association. The purpose of HMODA is to try to educate the community on occupational therapy's purpose and our intervention ability as far as home modifications are concerned. Ultimately, from an OT standpoint, we want to be the primary providers of home modification services in the community. Mm-hmm. With that being said, there are many home modification specialists who are starting their own businesses. So they will have LLCs of their own. Mm-hmm. They are currently working for agencies such as the Agency on Aging or Centers for Independent Living. I actually, right before I started the role as a clinical liaison, I had a position as an independent contractor with a local Center for Independent Living. I had gone through a training process with the Center for Independent Living, and unfortunately, they lost their contract with their referral source. So that ended up falling through, which was, it was disheartening, to be honest. But those things do happen when you're an independent contractor. So contract with agencies, yes, that absolutely does happen. Working independently as a provider of home modification services, that absolutely does happen. The majority of home modification providers, as far as OT clinicians are concerned, are really pushing for a cash-based service. And I can't really talk too much about that only because my knowledge base is limited. As I said, I'm in school right now, so I haven't really been able to dive into this as much as I would like to. But I do attend meetings when I'm able to. And the path that I'm seeing, the trajectory that I'm seeing, is that the majority of OT clinicians that are breaking into the home modification industry are really trying to push for cash-based reimbursement.
Okay, that makes sense. Nice. What books would you recommend to listeners?
What books would I recommend? Oh my goodness. I'll be honest with you. I don't have any specific titles that I could give to you.
That's okay.
But I will say that Shoshana Shamberg, who initially piqued my interest in home modifications, she did feature a couple of techs that were very involved with home modifications, keeping our disabled community in their homes, but also architectural design. So if that's something that an OT or a PT clinician is interested in following that type of path, architectural design for disability is something that I can't stress enough the importance of that.
Okay.
So like I said, I can't really give you any specific titles that I would recommend, but definitely delving into those types of texts would be extremely helpful.
Okay, that makes sense. So for our closing recording, I did not click the record button for our closing conversation with Olivia, unfortunately. But we had a short closing, and I really wanted to say thank you, Olivia, so much for your time, sharing your journey and your story, and the kind words and support that you provided was really invaluable, and the timing was perfect. It's nice to know that this work is actually benefiting others and people are getting something out of it. So again, thank you. I really appreciate your support and kind words with Rehab Rebels. Thank you. If there's anything I can do for you in the future, please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, if there are listeners who have a guest in mind that they would like to hear on the show or have questions or comments, don't hesitate to reach out to me. You can contact me at the rehabrebels.org website. At the top of the screen, you can click contact, or you can go over to Instagram at Rehab Rebels Podcast and contact me there. So thank you so much for listening and take care.
Thank you for listening to the Rehab Rebels Podcast. If this podcast was useful, make sure to hit that subscribe button and leave a review. For more information about transitioning to alternative careers, head to rehabrebels.org or follow us on Instagram at Rehab Rebels Podcast. We'll see you next time.